Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Active Radio KHII 88.9 FM Podcast. We really appreciate you joining us today. My name is John Hurt, and we're going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our community. By sharing knowledge through our conversations, we will try to impart some information you may need about what is happening in the Tularosa Basin and across southern New Mexico. So let's get to the interviews.
And good morning. It is 8:06. I'm Mike Durber with you. Joining me in the studio right now, Michael Gutierrez of the Flickinger Center. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great.
And boy, I tell you what, we are thrilled to have this gentleman on the phone with us this morning, who will be performing at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts on November 29th.
Yes, this next Wednesday.
This next Wednesday, Stefan Rimbel. Good morning, Stefan.
Hello. Good morning.
I tell you what, we're thrilled to have you here and coming to Alamogordo, New Mexico. It's cold here right now, buddy, so be prepared for that. But we're thrilled to have you on the phone with us. Stefan, if you could kind of give us a little bit of background on you. Who is Stefan Rimbel, and how did you get your start in the music career?
So, my name is Stefan Rimbel. I'm from France. So I grew up in Fontainebleau, like near Fontainebleau, which is the hometown of Django Reinhardt. So when I grew up, we always had like the gypsies around, and we always had like the music of Django. So I grew up surrounded by that sound a little bit, but it was very faint. You know, it was really in the background. It was not as powerful as it is today. Today, like there is a Django's music everywhere. Mm-hmm. But back then, you know, it was still a presence, you know. And when I was like 18, 19 years old, and I decided to become a professional musician, I started studying jazz. And the only name in jazz that I knew was Django Reinhardt, the only guitarist. So that's what I started. And they were right there. And then I discovered really their music at that point, you know. I went to the Django Reinhardt Festival in my town. And then I just witnessed what it is live, you know, and I decided to take that path of like learning their music. So I spent several, like 6-7 years going to the campsites and learn the traditional way how it works. And then in 2000, year 2000, I moved to Boston. I went to Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And I perfected my knowledge in jazz and other styles of music. And then in 2003, I was like, I had my training completed. And then I went to New York and I started like to compose. I started to play with my band. This is really when my career started. I mean, I had a career in France already. I started to do good, but I interrupted it to like go to Berkeley and restart. So it's really in 2003 that I restarted for good, you know? And from there, I started to compose for films, compose for my band, continue to teach the music of Django Reinhardt, and continue to play also sometimes his stuff, you know, to play in the gypsy tradition. I love to do that. So I do a little bit of everything, you know. I teach a lot because I think Django Reinhardt is to the guitar what Bach is to the piano.
Oh, wow.
And if you're a guitarist and you practice the music of Django, then you just get better. No matter what you play, you study Django, you're going to get better. If you're a piano player and you learn the Bach, preludes and fugues and stuff, you're just going to get better. No matter what you play, it's mechanical. So Django has a little bit of that power in the world of guitar. It's like extremely sensual. There is everything contained within this playing. So that's why it's always a source of joy for me. It's like finding treasures every time I transcribe a solo. And his system of playing is very simple. That's what I try to convey to my students. And so that's why I keep like teaching it and studying it and all, because it's a never-ending source of beauty.
I tell you what, that is a fantastic history, learning from Django Reinhardt. So now I got to ask you this question, which wasn't on the list. You know, Django played with basically two fingers. Is that what you do too?
It's funny because I was expecting you to talk about that right now. when he was 18, his hand got burned. Like his left side got burned in the fire in his trailer. Mm-hmm. And that burned some of his tendons. So he could not really completely unfold the third and fourth finger, which resulted in him playing his solos mainly with two fingers. And of course, he could use the other two fingers to play chords, but he could not really use them for solos. But it didn't change anything, because the way the guitar works, you don't need like all his fingers. He would have done more stuff with all his fingers, and we would have never known anything. But because he burned his hand and he played his solos with two fingers, that's how we transcribed them. And this is how you can see what he saw. This is when like all those shapes materialize, because you have no choice. You have two fingers. You have to like try to find things where you are not familiar with. And this is when you start to do two things, is visualize harmony on the fingerboard because of that, the way he did. And also in terms of position of the hand when you play guitar, the first finger is of extreme importance because it's the positional finger. So it moves to reposition yourself according to harmony naturally, you know? Mm-hmm. So there is also a great science of placement in his music because of that. He makes everything very, very, very clear.
Yes.
I tell you what, that is fascinating. Now, I got Michael Gutierrez here, and he's got a question he wants to ask you.
Oh, okay. It was more on the lines of the two finger thing, and you kind of answered it, but it was do you learn them two finger style? And you kind of said yes.
Yes. So we learn them with two fingers at first, and once we have it memorized with two fingers and we see the harmony and all, then we play with all fingers. Then you do the real work of like speed and all with all your fingers.
Very cool.
Because sometimes also playing with two fingers is more practical. It's not like playing one thing or the other or the other. It's all mixed up in the muscle memory. So when you're in concert and you don't have time to think, it's going to be one thing or the other, the quickest one, you know, the one that comes to your mind right here, right now.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes that two finger technique is way more efficient for a lot of things. So it just depends. It just adds something. So that's why we do like those two different fingerings, because the mind, when you give it like two information around one information, it understands better. I give you an analogy. I was reading Thus Spoke Zarathustra, Friedrich Nietzsche. So I'm reading my book. I love it. And then I found a very good reading on the radio, on YouTube. So I go on YouTube, I listen to that reading, and I realize it's a completely different translation from Nietzsche's book. So now what I'm doing is reading my book with a completely different translation while listening. And those two sources that were like different but talking at the same about the same thing made the meaning of the phrase itself way deeper.
Mm.
See, the contrary information around the central information made that central information more relevant. And it's the same thing here. You play one thing with two fingers, you play it with more fingers, it creates an activity in the brain that makes it understand it in its totality.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that is fascinating. Former guitar player here myself, and Michael Gutierrez still is and stuff. And I know playing guitar when I was doing it, playing songs with the band and stuff, I never really thought my hand just went and did what it needed to do for each song and stuff, and that was the cool thing and right there. So, Stefan, I guess, I know that Jinger Reinhardt was a big influence in your life. Was there anybody else that was a big influence in the type of music you play, or somebody you really admired during that time as you were coming up?
Oh, yeah, my favorite band always was Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah, right
Pink
on.
Floyd, all right. I love this guy.
Oh, yeah, it's still like my favorite band ever. So when I started guitar, it was to play Pink Floyd.
Oh, cool.
So, same.
And then I also learned, I love the Police, so I was learning the stuff from the Police. I was learning stuff from Led Zeppelin, from the Rolling Stones, you know.
Wow.
I was way into that, you know. Later on, I discovered Steve Vai and Satriani and all. There was a time in my life where I knew like almost the entire Surfing with the Alien album by heart, like playing it. So I studied that too. And then like I developed a fondness for Frank Zappa too on the guitar.
Yeah.
And later on, Ralph Towner.
Oh, Ralph Towner.
The people that I really admire the most on the guitar that had really a big impact, if we strictly speak about guitar, not just band, you know, mm-hmm. but on guitar is David Gilmour from Pink Floyd, for sure. Mm-hmm. Frank Zappa.
Yeah.
Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Mark Knopfler is one of the greatest guitar players. I don't know. That guy, I don't know how he gets a tone like that. His ideas are beautiful. He's a monster. I love Mark Knopfler. And then, of course, Ralph Towner later on. Ralph Towner, I think, is like the most creative classical composer of the end of the century, of the 20th century. The last quarter of the 20th century is Ralph Towner on the guitar. People are all about Leo Brouwer, which is great, but Ralph Towner stands out as a very original voice because of his background in jazz. It's very different than anything else. It's so beautiful what he composed, and it's not weird or anything. It doesn't even sound different than anything else, but it is. And the music is so good. It's so unique. So Ralph Towner is definitely like on my top five list, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I tell you, that is fantastic. Now, one other question I wanted to ask you was, where are some of the places that you have played across the world?
Oh, I regularly go to India, which I love. I absolutely love India dearly. We usually go, we went to Bombay, we went to Hyderabad, but usually we go to Bangalore. That's amazing. I love India. India is a joyful, gigantic mess that you cannot detangle. And that's great. Because I'm so tired sometimes of all that organized stuff around the clock. You know, everything is on a grid. I find it very tiring. You know, it's like very corporate everywhere on every level of life. And India is completely wild. So there is that life in it, all those colors and that wilderness, and it's really amazing. So I love to go to India. But also I go a lot to Europe, to France, to Germany, England. I played in South Korea. I played, in Mexico. I played a lot in Canada. I played all over the U.S.
And now you're going to wind up in Alamogordo, New Mexico on the 29th.
I love New Mexico. I love New Mexico. I can't wait to go back. It's one of my favorite states. I love like New Mexico and Arizona. I love these two states.
So
beautiful. When I go to Albuquerque, usually I fly in Albuquerque, and the first thing I do is I go to Chaco Canyon. Chaco Canyon, Tent Rock. I also went to Malpais. I love to drive around. Like, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
You have to spend some time at White Sands while you're here in Alamogordo.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I can't wait.
I tell you what, you'll love it out there. It'll blow your mind. I know when I first came to New Mexico, we thought we'd blow everybody's mind on our Christmas card. We went out in July and put on stocking hats and rode a sled out at White Sands National Park, and we sent that out as Christmas cards, and one of the responses we got back was, how can you be wearing shorts in such cold weather with all that snow? And I had to explain it to them. Well, I tell you what, Stefan, we've talked about the places you played and the people who influenced you. Michael, you got any questions for Stefan?
I'm really excited that he is going to be doing an educational outreach. He's going to be playing for the school kids, which is something that we're really big about here at the Flickinger. And I don't know. Can you tell us about your background in education?
Oh, yeah. That's like one of my favorite subjects. I love to teach. I just love to teach. I love to be with people. And I love to fix problems with them. So that's already a good thing. And I went the opposite way of everyone else. I went to simplicity. That's the big thing with my teaching. I was looking for what is the most minimal amount of things you need to know to play music. Because when I was, I went to a lot of different schools and private lessons and this and that. And every time, everything was like so complicated. So I mean, every time I wanted to play something, they were talking to me about modes and this and that. And like, take that super Locrian from the second degree, and then you omit the fifth, and you end up with this. It's like, what is this nonsense? How can you? This is not how music works. It's impossible. That's not how it works. So I went the opposite way. I was like, all right, let's do a clean slate and reduce everything to its most simple form. And I found what I call the frame. It's a very simple structure, very simple, minimalist. And I realized that the less you know, well, you need to know a minimum, okay. But once you have that minimum, there is space in between. And from that space that you have within, then the music can emerge. Because a melody is never something that's going to come from the rational mind. It's something that comes from the subconscious. It's something that comes from your ears, from your experience. And you know we have taste. Like some people love Pink Floyd. Some people hate it, you know? And they like the Rolling Stone or something else, you know? So we all have different tastes because I believe that we vibrate with a kind of melody and a kind of groove and a kind of harmony, you know? We don't vibrate with the whole thing. Some people love Mozart. Some people hate Mozart. So, and that doesn't mean it's bad. That just means you vibrate with it or you don't.
Right.
And I believe that the things you vibrate with, you listen to it a lot, and that naturally imprints a certain sense of melody in you also. So when you're going to practice something, you're going to go toward that sense of melody that you, first you have it in you, and then, like, for example, you like Pink Floyd, you don't like Led Zeppelin, let's say, so you're going to transcribe a lot of Pink Floyd solo, and they're going to start to, like, resonate in you, you know? In your natural way of producing solos. Then when you know the frame, you know sort of the grammar of the thing, so you can produce things that now you have a musical reference with Pink Floyd, you have a grammatical reference with the frame, and now you can do your own thing that's going to be like, not like Pink Floyd, but perhaps in a similar area of doing melodies and stuff like that, you know? But it has to come from within. It never comes from outside. That whole thing of playing scales over chords, it will never give birth to a melody. Never. That's not how it works.
Oh, yeah.
Melody is something that comes from within. And the less you know, the more space you have. And the more it's your instinct that creates melody. So you're very happy to play. Because when you use all the time the rational mind, it's kind of like a sad thing. It's like constantly thinking and not feeling anything, always wondering when you're going to be able to play those melodies and all. So I went like the opposite way. And I guarantee you that when you have like a very simple system, like my students with the simple system, they can play things faster. They can, like, the process of like being able to play is definitely faster because you spend less time trying to gather all kinds of information that are useless. And you have the bare minimum, and then you can track, you know? You can just, like, get on a journey right away, you know? It's like travel light.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, you're going to be doing a student outreach.
Yes.
With the Flickinger Center. I just got to ask this question because I think it's so wonderful. Relating to young children, exposing them to the arts. How excited about that do you have to be for that? I mean, you got to be ecstatic about that.
Yeah, I'm super happy. Always, it's always a different thing to play for children. It's wild, man. there's no rule. You just play and whatever, it's a different thing. I don't know, there's no way of explaining it, man, because, you know, the children, I don't know if you have read this book by Guy Debord, a French philosopher, called Spectacle Society. It's a great, great book, a very important book, where, anyway, he described how the society had become, like, completely focused on spectacle. And it's true that us, as adults, we like to sit on the theater and either watch music, listen to a theatrical piece or something like that. We are like spectators. Mm-hmm. A lot of people nowadays, like more and more, we are all spectators, especially with our phones and stuff like that. Oh, so yeah. We've been fed constant spectacles, constant shows, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
But so there is a way where an adult will sit and he will receive his show. So he knows how to be passive and receive the show. But the children, they are not trained yet for that. So they're like unpredictable. You play, you don't know what's going to happen, but it's also refreshing, you know, because they are not expecting you to feed them a spectacle. They are there, they listen, they talk with their friend. You know, there is no rules for them.
Oh, so yeah.
That's very interesting.
I've had one act, they say that they love to play for the kids because every time they go out there, they're the Beatles.
Yeah. No doubt about that. But I think one of the cool things is, and I think you're going to have this same impact, is like Michael sitting here. He was attending one of those student outreaches when he was in grade school and exposed to the arts and stuff, and he got exposed to guitar, and now Michael is a proficient guitar player. He's got a band, Rosewater Blues, and now he's the director of entertainment for the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts. That outreach that he attended had a big impact on his life, and I know that probably when you do this student outreach here in Alamogordo, some young person is going to be, I want to be that.
Yeah, it's amazing, and they're going to see also drums and bass, and there's like a lot of different instruments. I think like we're going to probably do some presentation around these instruments, like listen to the drums, what he can do, what is a drum, what is a bass, and It's very exciting. But you know, also, we should never forget, because now we're in society, spectacle society, so everything is corporate, and we sit in a theater, and we listen to a show. This guy is a musician, this guy doesn't play music. But in reality, if you go back to more of our roots, you know, we're human beings, so we react to music. First, we don't really know what music is. Why do we have music? Why do we need music so much? It's just sound. Organized, so we need it. It's weird. It does something to us. When you have a movie without music wouldn't be the same. You know, the music enhance the scenes, enhance the vibe in the movie, make the movie better. So I don't know what it is with music, but it's been with us forever. And we always sung our human condition and our lives with music. So we always scored our lives forever. So we are all musicians. This is part of human nature.
Yes.
And we should not lose that. And those kids that will be in the room, they are also musicians. We are musicians by nature.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're not playing it, you're enjoying it, and singing it or whatever. So I agree with that statement. Everybody is a musician. Stefan, tell us about your quartet. What all do you have in it, and how many people?
So, quartet were four people, and there's Nick Anderson on drums, Josh Kay on rhythm guitar, and Ari Folman-Cohen on bass. And this is one of the greatest rhythm section in New York City. It's probably one of the greatest rhythm section in the world.
Wow.
These guys are fantastic. They're unbelievable. And it's good. You will see. You will be surprised. The bass is also an incredible soloist. Mm-hmm. It's the other soloist of the band. So it's not very usual that the bassist has such space also for that. So on one hand, he's doing the great job of like simple bass playing, very clear. He's holding the whole house, you know, the whole foundation. So when he comps, it's very clear in the comping, which is very important. And but when he solos, it's like a super virtuoso. So he really has both. Same thing with the drummer. The drummer is so tasty. He has such a large palette of sounds, of grooves, such an incredible natural technique. It's unbelievable. So that's going to be, that's going to be an incredible presentation. That's going to be an incredible series of shows.
Well, I tell you what, we are looking forward to it. You're coming on September 29th, 7 p.m. at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts. Now, I got one more question for you. And you can disagree with me on this one, but I think one of the greatest ever guitar riffs was LaGrange by ZZ Top. What's your opinion?
I love ZZ Top. I love these guys. It's a great riff. I love it. Yeah, they're amazing. I mean, some of the stuff they wrote are in history, man.
Oh, yeah. Like,
they stayed with us. You know, you say LaGrange, okay, sure.
I love it and stuff. So, Stefan, we are really looking forward to your performance at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts, September 29th, Wednesday at 7 p.m. Can't wait for you to get here. I know you're going to inspire a lot of young people, and I know you're going to put on a performance that people are going to walk away from the Flickinger Center and just go, wow. So we are really looking forward to you coming in. Michael, you got anything else for Stefan?
Nope, just looking forward to this next weekend, or this next week. It's a week from today, guys.
A week from today.
Get your tickets. It's going to be a fantastic performance. All the music, go check them out on Spotify and or any of the other streaming services.
YouTube as well.
YouTube, a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. I'm really excited to meet you, Stefan.
Yeah, me too, and I'm so looking forward to it.
All right, Stefan Rimble and his quartet will be in Alamogordo on September 29th, 7 p.m. at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts. Get those tickets at flickingercenter.com. You can even pick them up at the door. Stefan, thank you for taking time out to visit with us today. We appreciate you, and we can't wait to see you here in Alamogordo.
Thank you so much. Looking forward, and see you next week.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. There you got it, folks. Get those tickets at FlickingerCenter.com. Michael, that is going to be a performance on that stage. Part of the World Passport Series that's going on.
Yeah, born in Paris, France. So we've got a started out in America. We did the Beatles. We had the UK. We have the Lobos Brothers from Mexico. So now we're stopping in France for this performance. And couldn't be more excited to have him.
And then coming up on December 12th, Mariachi Christmas.
Oh, Mariachi
and
Christmas.
Then we're going back out across the world again. It's going to be a fantastic premiere season.
Yes. Oh. And already cooking for the summer stuff. I've got a Cars tribute and a Highwaymen tribute coming this summer.
Wow.
So,
the Cars and the Highwaymen.
So we're going to have, Kris Kristofferson, Willie Nelson. Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash.
Yeah, and this is going to be a tribute because some of those guys aren't around no more.
Yes. But we're really excited about summer stuff. Yes, come check out the rest of this Passport series. Like I said, Stefan, world-class musician.
Yeah.
The main composition on a Grammy-winning soundtrack. You can't get better than this.
That's what we forgot to ask him. So.
Oh, yes. He's been on... done the soundtrack for quite a few movies, but famously for a few Woody Allen movies.
Yeah.
One of the big ones was Bistro from the ad is Bistro Fada from his movie Midnight in Paris.
And that's the song we used behind the ad for just performance and stuff. So,
got to come check out. If you've never been to a show at the Flickinger Center, you're missing out. And if you have been, come see it again. It's fantastic this season. There's a lot of energy. It's been really fun.
All right. That sounds good. Michael Gutierrez with the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts, Stefan Rimble, coming up next Wednesday, 7 p.m. at the Flickinger Center for Performing Arts. You can get tickets at FlickingerCenter.com and check out the rest of the performances as well.
We are Active Radio, 88.9 FM, KHII Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 KEDU Ruidoso.